Dark Wraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester 2013. Lecture 11, delivered on September 25, 2013. The title of this lecture is The Metrics of Risk.
Today, the metrics of risk. Risk is a way of describing the fact that we don't know the outcome with certainty. So there is risk involved in taking on a project that involves the future, because we don't know what the future will hold. Well, we do to a certain extent. We know, for example, we're all going to die. We all know pretty much for certain that the sun is going to rise tomorrow. But in terms of business, we don't know with certainty what our cash flows are going to be like from one period to the next. One term that we use sometimes to as a way of describing risk is volatility. In other words, the ups and downs. It represents that certain unknown that exists in stock prices, in cash flows, the ups and downs. Now, within a company, we have to project the future. We just have to do it. We have to say, all right, what do we expect our cash flow to be like in the next period? Because if we can't do that, then we can't do budgeting. We can't do planning, capital expenditures. We don't know how to go about preparing. So every company does projections. And typically, they'll do several different layers of projections. They'll say, all right, let's project over the period of the year. Let's project over the next 3 years. Let's project over the next 5 years, knowing for sure that we're not going to get it right, but we at least have some handle on getting prepared for that future. Now, one way we do this, and this is actually a fairly practical way that's done in a lot of companies, at least some variation on this, is we say, all right, let's do this for next year. Now, we can project one number. Well, next year we're going to have revenues of $500,000. Well, that's putting all your eggs in one basket. It is better if we say, let's look at scenarios of the economy and what that would imply for the cash flows of our firm. So let's say that, I don't know, let's put ourselves into a 5 possibility scenario. So we'll have a middle scenario. Let's say that one would have probably about a 40% chance of occurring. And then we'll have some on each side of it. And then we'll have, let's say, a 6%. And a 6%, and a 2%. Well, is that right now? No, 4%. Okay. Now, typically, when we do what's called a probability distribution, we exhaust, of course, we'll exhaust 100% probability that it's going to be one of these. So we could have a scenario where we could have a really strong economy, 4%. And symmetrically, we could also have an absolute disaster, a terrible economy. And each of those would have 4% a chance of occurrence. We can also have a bad and a good and then we could have sort of like one that's 6% and 6%. And then let's say that we could have like a 20% chance on either side of a for 20% not so bad. And kind of good. And then we have one in the middle that's sort of like meh. And now we're going to put some numbers to these. Okay, so let's say that we, in the just a meh economy, we would, let's say, for next year we can say, we could have a $50,000 revenue. And then in a kind of good economy, $55,000. A good economy, $60,000. And then in a strong economy, $65,000. And then on the other side, a not so bad economy, but it's still not even decent. 45,000, a bad economy, 40,000. And not the greatest economy in the world, but it's a terrible economy, 35,000. Okay, those are our possible revenues. So in other words, instead of saying we're going to have this much in revenue, we think next year, we lay out a probability distribution. And this is sort of a science in itself and an art, often done by the financial analysts themselves, communicating with other divisions like accounting and with marketing, possibly with others within the organization. But that's what we're going to do. Now, we may need to make this a symmetric distribution because then we can do some things with normal probability theory. So, for example, the first thing that we would want to do here, and then we'll go down the line here in a minute, but the first thing that we would want to do is calculate the expected value. Which is going to be nothing but the sum across all of the possibilities, in this case from 1 to 6, of the cash flow times the probability. That's a fancy way of just saying multiply each cash flow by its probability and add them up. If it's a symmetric distribution, it will always end up being the center. That saves you a calculation right there down the line. And there will be calculations out the wazoo, and you can save yourself a lot of time by remembering a couple of things. So we've got the center of the distribution. If you do this, 35,000 times 0.04 plus 40,000 times 0.06 plus 45,000 times 0.20 plus 50,000 times 0.40 plus 55,000 times 0.20 plus 60,000 times 0.06 plus 65,000 times 0.04, you will come up with $50,000. You will. The next one is kind of a pain in the butt, but we need it. This is our first measure of the possible variation in outcomes. And this is the standard deviation. And I'll write it in fancy mathematical notation first. It is the sum, the square root of the sum from k equals 1 to n of each cash flow minus the expected value, which we call mu, quantity squared times the probability. This takes a while to calculate. You have to do it. But you can make some shortcuts in doing this. Basically, what it's saying is, I take each one of these cash flow values, 35,000, for example, subtract off the mean that I found, square the result, and then multiply it by the probability. You do that for every one of these and add them up, and then take the square root. And like I said, this is a pain in the butt to do. And I'll write it out here for this one. It would be the square root of 35,000 minus 50,000 quantity squared times 0.04 plus 40,000 minus 50,000 quantity squared times 0.06 plus 45,000, this is way too much like work, 45,000 minus 50,000 quantity squared times 0.20 plus 50,000 minus 50,000 quantity squared times 0.40 plus 55,000 minus 50,000 quantity squared times 0.20 plus 60,000 minus 50,000 quantity squared times 0.06 plus 65,000 minus 50,000 quantity squared times 0.04. And if you do that, you will get the standard deviation, sigma. There is a way to make this a shorter pain than it is there. If you notice something, 35,000 minus 50,000 quantity squared times 0.04 is the same as 65,000 minus 50,000 quantity squared times 0.04. This number and this number will come out to be the same on your calculator. Similarly, 40,000 minus 50,000 squared times 0.06 is the same as 60,000 minus 50,000 quantity squared times 0.06. Similarly, 45,000 minus 50,000 quantity squared times 0.20 is the same as 55,000 minus 50,000 quantity squared times 0.20. And 50,000 minus 50,000 squared is zero. What that means is that really all I have to do is this little part right here. 55,000 minus 50,000 quantity squared times 0.20 plus 60,000 minus 50,000 quantity squared times 0.06 plus 65,000 minus 50,000 quantity squared times 0.04, and then just times it by 2, and I will have done the other side. And the middle is 0 anyway. And then take the square root of that. I don't have to do the whole thing. You can do it if you want. I mean, you know, that's your thing, but you don't have to. You can cut out more than half of the work by just doing what I did there. Now let me try this, and I encourage you strongly to make sure that you can do this, and also point out to you how easy it is to make a mistake doing this too, a calculator routine. So I'm going to just pound it out here, right in front of you in real time with you helping to make sure that I don't make a mistake. So that's 5,000, whoops, clear. I'm going to do square root. Whoops, I can't do that. Clear. 5,000 squared times 0.0 times 0.2 plus 10,000 squared times 0.06 plus 15,000 squared times 0.04 equals, and then I'll times it by 2, equals, and then I'm going to take the square root of that. And if I work that out, I hope I'll come up with $6,324.56. Now, for heaven's sakes, is that what you get? What say you? Got a yes? You get it? Make sure you do things in the right order. Do the inside first, then times by 2, then take the square root. Now, that number right there actually has meaning in and of itself. You've had that MQM class in statistics, right? You've had that already? And I'm sure you remember everything from that class, like, okay, or not. Not, probably. Okay, there's a property of normal distributions. And here we're assuming that the probability distribution is normal. There's a property of normal distributions that's actually kind of useful in business. And by the way, I'm giving you numbers similar to the ones for my company. They're not at this scale, but I tried to sort of model it the way my small company is. So here's what I know from this $6,324. If it's a normal probability distribution, then between the mean minus one standard deviation and the mean plus one standard deviation, there is a very large chance. Well, not that large, but it's a chance. There's a 67% chance that my cash flow will actually land in that area, in that region. So what that would mean here is that from $50,000 minus $6,324.56 up to $50,000 plus $6,324.56, I have a 67% chance of that happening. So what that would mean is that there's a 67% chance that my cash flow, my actual cash flow at the revenue line will be between $43,675 about and $56,325. Now don't go dollars and cents with this because you're estimating everything, really. I have a 67% chance of falling in that area, in that region of cash flow. Here's why that's important to business. I have fixed expenses in business that, and also variable expenses. If I can cover my variable expenses, then I can stay in business and live to the next round to deal with fixed expenses. So if I can know that I have a, let's say that I know I'm going to have variable expenses of $40,000 next year. Okay, I have a 67% chance of being able to cover that threat, that variable cost level. That's what that tells me. Yeah. It's from probability theory. It is that normal distributions, a normal distribution, if this is the mean, then every normal distribution, 67% of the area of the normal is from the mean minus the standard deviation to the mean plus a standard deviation. That's from the theory of probabilities. We use it all the time in business. So if you're not into theory, you might as well stay out of business. This is the only handle I have. I can say, all right, there's a 67% chance that I'll be in this area. Okay, I can live. There's a 67% chance then that I'll be able to make it next year. I know another thing, too. There's a 95% chance that I will be, the cash flow, at the in this case the revenue line, will be between this mean minus two standard deviations and the mean plus two standard deviations. So in other words, I know that out this far, from the mean minus 2 sigma to the mean plus 2 sigma, in that area, there is a 95% chance I will be in that area. So in that case, what that would mean in this case is from $50,000 minus 2 times 63, 26, 3, 2, 4, 56, up to 50,000 plus 2 times $6,324.56. So let me run that one here real quick. That'd be 50,000, clear. 50,000 minus 2 times 63,24.56 would be 37,351. So it's about approximately, rounding it to the dollars, 37,351 up to 50,000 plus 63,24.56. So my ass. Let's try that again. 50,000 plus 2 times 63,24.56 is 62,649 approximately. There's a 95% chance that I'll land in that area. That's useful to know, too. I got a 95% chance of having my revenues between about $37,000 and $63,000. We get a little loose with these because everything is so uncertain. You're not going to get great accuracy in that area. That's useful, too. And finally, there's one more we sometimes talk about, although, to be honest with you, realistically in business, they don't really talk about this one, calculate this. It's just sort of an arcane thing. From the mean minus 3 sigma to the mean plus 3 sigma, there's a 99% chance that your cash flows will land in there. But like I said, that's such a wide band. Sure, you're going to be 99% sure that you're going to be in there somewhere. And just to finish it, for the sake of completeness, 50,000 minus 3 times 63,24.56 would be 31,026. 31,026. 32. up to 50,000 plus 3 times 63, 24, 56. That's 68,974. 68,974. There's 99% chance that I'll land in that area. But like I said, realistically, I almost don't ever see that anyone bother with that because, yeah, you're sure, pretty much 99% sure you'll land in there, but that's such a wide band. You know, it really doesn't tell you anything informative, but it's there for you. So that sigma has a use in and of itself. It has a use of its own. But for the purposes that we will have for internal business calculations, it's not really, or even for external analysis, but for especially for internal. You see, the mean over time will be shifting. As your company grows, it will slide forward. And that will tend to cause a distortion in what the sigma means to you. So we have this last measure we call the coefficient of variation, the CV. This sort of takes the scale of the numbers out of the way. And all it does is just say the coefficient of variation, the CV, of the, it's just a measure that says, all right, what is the scaled volatility? And the scaled volatility is take the standard deviation and divide it by the size of the cash flow or the operation. That way, the CV can be used all the way down the line in your cash flow analysis. And the variation, the metric CV, will tell you the same risk metric from the revenue, which is a big number, down to the net income, which is a small number. The volatilities that you're measuring by CV are not being affected by the size of the cash flow. We can also do this from one corporation to the next because the CV has taken out the scale of operation. So I can actually compare volatility of a huge corporation to a small corporation by doing this. And in this case, the CV will be, where the heck, what was my sigma there? Oh, 63, 24, 56. Divided by $50,000. And if you do 63, 24, 56, divided by $50,000. Notice something before I write the number. The dollars cancel out. This is a pure number. In fact, this is a percentage. And you write it, times it by 100, and you have a percentage measure of volatility. In this case, this percentage measure of volatility is my sales risk. This is my sales risk. Interesting as that might be, this begins to allow us to shape our understanding of the profile of risk as we go down a financial statement. And what we do in this analysis is we break down a company's a company's expenses into fixed costs and variable costs. So the first thing that I'm going to do here very quickly with you, and I want you to help me get the calculations hammered out. Let's take our variable costs off the table first. Let's assume that in this company, for the coming year, our cost of goods sold, the major variable expense that moves up and down with the sales, is going to be 20% of our sales. So I can say that for a $35,000 sales level, we would have $7,000 in variable costs. For $40,000, we would have $8,000. For $45,000, we would have $9,000. For $50,000, we would have $10,000. For $55,000, we would have $11,000. For $6,000, we would have $12,000. And for $65,000, we would have $13,000 in variable cost. So, at our next line, which would be similar to gross income, we will have the following distribution: 4% chance that our gross income would be $28,000. 6% chance that our gross income would be $32,000. A 20% chance that our gross would be $36,000. A 40% chance that our gross would be $40,000. A 20% chance that our gross would be $44,000. A 6% chance that our gross would be $48,000. And a 4% chance that our gross would be $52,000. No big thing there. And by the way, I will... Apparently it was up there and I had to close it because it confused people it was up there. I have a template table that I will open back up so you can see it, so that you can just fill in the numbers. You don't have to make these tables. You can just fill in the numbers as you go down with the instructions on the different things. But let's start. Let's go again here. Let me write, by the way, my mean, my standard deviation, my CV. At the income line, at the revenue line, the mean was 50,000. The standard deviation was 63,24,56, and the CV came out to be 12.65%. Okay, now we're down at the next line here. We've got to get the gross income volatility workout done. First things first. What's my mean going to be for the gross income line? What's the mean going to be without doing calculation? 40. Exactly. 40,000. Now, the only one that's a real pain in the butt is a sigma. But you do that fast, and if you do it my way fast, what you would get... Real fast, I would do 4,000 squared times 0.20 plus 8,000 squared times 0.06 plus 12,000 squared times 0.04, and then take the square root of that. My ass. What do you get? Oh, times 2. Okay, 4,000 squared times 0.2 plus 8,000 squared times 0.06 plus 12,000 squared times 0.04 equals times 2 equals, and then take the square root of that. What do you get? I get $5,059.64. $5,059.64. Notice that your volatility seems to have gone down, but also your average went down as well. So that's why the CV is what we have to use, is because we have to scale by the dropping number on the cash flow side. So if I do that, divided by $5,059.64 divided by 4,000, no.
40,000,
there we go, thank you. I was just wanting to see if anyone noticed that I did that wrong, just so you'd see. Okay, fine. Times, what do you get for your number? Anyone get it? Well, isn't that strange? My volatility didn't change. Why would that be? Simply because variable costs don't change volatility. Only fixed costs create risk. Variable costs don't create risk. This is a hugely important point in business and in consumer affairs. A variable cost isn't going to change a thing. Have you ever done bungee jumping? Let me tell you something. You see these people, I'm free, and you know, you're floating downward. Well, there's really not much feeling to it, because your whole body is varying at the same time. Here's a secret that they don't tell you. When that thing grabs you, the bungee cord finally goes tight, your soft parts keep going. That's your spleen, your liver, your man parts, everything that is not bone just keeps going. That's when you feel excited. Because you see those soft parts come out your mouth on their way. They're still going down. See, if your whole body was going down at the same time, you don't feel it. But those fixed pieces of you grab a hold, and then they're not going anywhere anymore while the soft pieces just keep moving. Now, what that has to do with this, I'm not exactly sure. But you see, when you have any of you, do any of you know about Adobe and Microsoft? They've changed their business model from shrink wrap to subscription. So now you can get Microsoft 360, whatever it is, or Adobe's Photoshop by subscribing. You don't have to buy it anymore. You subscribe to it. And you have to pay a fee every month if you want to keep having it. What that does is create a fixed cost on you. That creates greater risk because your income might be swinging up and down. If your costs move with that up and down, that's great. But if you've got a cost that stays the same from month to month, then you have created a risk that wasn't there before. Someday, you, sir, are going to be a wild and crazy guy. You'll live on your motorbike, you'll have your tats, and you know, the whole nine yards. You'll live free and easy. You make money, you buy great food. You don't make money, you just buy less. There's nothing that is fixed in your life. But then you get married. And then you have 5 kids. And you have a mortgage payment every month. And then you also have your utility bills every month. You have your Adobe subscription every month. You have your Viagra you have to buy every month. Well, actually you don't, because she doesn't like you that much. Okay. Do you understand what's happened to you? When you were young and your costs were all just went up and down with your income, there's no big thing. This month, yeah. But when you have fixed costs and your income varies, oh, that's all kinds of exciting, because you can actually hit bankruptcy. You can have courts get involved with you, you see. So when fixed costs come in, they create risk. Variable costs don't create risk. You understand what that means for the way companies' models work these days? Is that instead of hiring people to do work internally, like call centers and all that kind of stuff, they outsource it so that they no longer have the fixed cost on their books. It's someone else's problem. I don't have to hire you, woman, to do my work for me, because you're a fixed cost. You're a burden on me. So I will just hire someone in India to do it, because then if I can pay the bill, but it's their problem. They have to hire you. They have to have you as their fixed cost. I don't anymore. Moving fixed costs off your book and turning everything you can into a variable cost as much as possible is the way to reduce your risk of cash flows. See this? Look, the variable cost, it was moving up and it was moving through the probability distribution, but it didn't affect the risk one bit. Now let's see what happens when we bring in the fixed costs of this firm. Let's say that the fixed costs of this firm are $10,000, 10 grand. And of course, given that they're fixed, that means that they don't care what you make in sales. They are there one way or the other. So you are going to have $10,000 off every one of these possible scenarios. And you are then in... Oops, 30,000. Essentially, at this point, where you are is at the EBIT line. More or less, at this point, you are at the EBIT line. Here, you're pretty much at your gross income. We don't say profit. That's a dirty word. Gross income. Here, we are probably at the operating income line, or in other words, at the EBIT line. Going back through the grinder here. Oh. Going back through the grinder here, we'll first of all, what's the mean going to be? That one's easy. Yeah, as long as it's symmetric, that's right. It's going to be a 30,000. It's going to be the center value. Beating this one out, and for God's sake, just make sure that I'm doing it right here. 30,000. What I do is 4,000 squared times 0.2. Plus 4,000 squared times 0.2 plus 8,000 squared times 0.06 plus 12,000 squared times 0.04 equals times 2 and then square root. Did you notice that I was doing the same calculation I did above? If you're thinking about how to do this as fast as possible, the EBIT sigma will be the same as the gross income sigma. Again, if you want to shorten your calculation, remember this. EBIT sigma will be the same as gross income sigma. It just works out that way every time. But the coefficient of variation will be different. The coefficient of variation will be different because you're dividing by a smaller mean. Dividing by 30,000, your coefficient of variation comes out to be 16.87%. This is our first important number. First important number. This is called your business risk. That's called your business risk. Something else is now here that we really care about. Your business risk minus your sales risk or your EBIT risk, your gross income risk, they're going to be the same number always. 12.65%. That comes out in this case to be 4.22%. That number right there, that is your contribution of operating leverage. So right now, at this line, we've hit two major markers. We now know the business risk, and we know how much of that was caused by fixed costs. In this company, do you see that about 25% of the business risk was caused by fixed costs? Do you see it? The total business risk was 16.87%. Of that, 4.22% was created just by our fixed costs of operations. So in other words, of all of our business risk, in this case, about a fourth of it has been created, caused by our fixed costs in the company. Is that good or bad? That's not the issue. We just know it. That's what we know now. And we can keep an eye on it. And if we want to say, well, let's reduce our operating leverage, we've got the way to measure it now. We can say, all right, our business risk, we'll measure that year to year, and then we'll look at how much of that is being caused by the operating leverage, so to see if we're going in the right direction or the wrong direction. But this is something that is done in business all the time. We do care about this. So we would expect the contribution to operating leverage for a service industry to be very low. We would expect it for a fixed manufacturing company to be very high. And we would keep an eye on those to make sure that they didn't get out of hand one way or the other. Now, the last one that is kind of important to us along this road is what is called, let's take out the interest expense. Let's say our interest expense every year is $2,000. Now remember, this next year, this is a fixed cost. You're going to pay this regardless of your sales level. You're going to pay it. So it's a fixed kind of cost. So let's have a look at what this does to our numbers. We'll have 16,000, we'll have 20,000, 24,000 at the EBT line, 28,000, 32,000, 46,000. I just... What? I didn't? Oh, I'm just that. I'm totally like impressed that you caught that, because usually people don't see that and I want them to. And it's like they just ignore it. That's good. The hell with it. There you go, right there. Wow. Okay, and that's your EBT. Earnings before taxes. Now let's, okay, obviously the mean is going to be the center value, which was 28,000. The hell? And now we start, just do the same meat grinder. I'm going to do 32,000 minus 28,000. That's 4,000. Squared times 0.20 plus 8,000. Wait a minute, stop. Why am I doing this again? What do you suppose the number is going to come out to be? Yes, that's exactly right. Spank me, Jesus. I found a clue about how to make these easy. The standard deviations, when you take away fixed costs, whether they're operating or interest, you're going to get the same standard deviation, because this curve is not squeezing or stretching. You're just moving it back and forth. So the standard deviation will be the same whenever you take away a fixed cost. So I'm not going to even bother to do it, because I'd probably make a mistake if I did. Again, you see the standard deviation. If you take away a fixed cost, all that does to a normal distribution, it doesn't change the squeeze or the spread of the distribution. All it does is shift it downward. So the standard deviation would not change whenever you take away a fixed cost. So I'm just going to put that down, and then I'll get my CV. 5059.64 divided by 28,000. Try that again. 5059.64 divided by 28,000 times 100% is 18.07%. The spread there, 18.07% minus 16.87%, which comes out to be 2.8%. Is that right? No. What does it come out to be? I can't do anything without a calculator anymore. 1.20%. That number right there, that is called the contribution of financial leverage. The contribution of financial leverage. In other words, when we get to EBT, we're going to find what we're seeing is a composite. The volatility at EBT has to do with sales volatility. It has to do with fixed costs of operation contribution to volatility. And it has to do with the fixed costs of interest payments and what they do to volatility. So all the way down the line, you're having these stack-ons happening. First, we have our business risk. And the part of that was the contribution of fixed costs. In this case, we see that the contribution of fixed costs was 4.22% of 16.87%. About 25% of our business risk is because we have fixed costs we pay. And then we go down, we take away our interest expense, and we find, okay, we have a larger volatility now, 18.07%. So apparently, adding on to business risk, we have this financial risk that's putting another 1.20% on. Now, if I were to look at that real quick, 1.2% of 16.87%, that's about 7.1% addition of volatility. Again, that 1.20% stacked on top of my business risk, that 1.2% stacked on 16.87%, that's about 7.1% increase in my volatility because of interest expenses, my leverage, my debt. So what that would tell me is that in this company, my fixed costs of operation are adding considerably more to my final volatility than are the interest costs. Now, one thing here is I'm talking like I'm at the end of the problem, and I am. Well, why? What about net income? You just went to EBT. Why am I not worried about net income here? Matter of fact, I can tell you right now what my net income volatility is. It's 18.07%. You go down, I can tell you your taxes, let's say, are, 30% of your net, 30% of EBT. 30% of pre-tax income is your income tax. I can tell you right now, my net income, I don't even have to do the calculation. My coefficient of variation for my net income is 18.07%. It's not going to be any different from my CV for EBT. Why? Yeah.
Taxes are
very expensive. Oh, yeah. Give him a pat on the buttock. Yes, please. That was incredible. They're a variable expense. So they actually, taxes don't create volatility. They do in the real world because you've got the marginal tax rate thing. But honestly, the taxes don't create the volatility. One thing, though, I should point out is these taxes that you pay in business that are just fixed taxes that you have to pay, like franchise fees and all these licenses, those do create volatility because they're fixed. They don't care whether you're making $1 million or $100. You have to pay the same amount of money on some of those stupid taxes. So in a way, there are taxes that do create some volatility, but it's usually not significant. That's the bottom line is, this is all there is to the problem. Once you get the hang of this, here's how it works. I'm going to put up a practice worksheet for you to do this weekend. On the exam, you'll have one of these problems to do. And you're thinking to yourself, well, how can I do that on an exam without taking a lot of crystal meth the night before? Because I give it to you before the exam. The day before the exam, I give you this problem, and then you work it out, and you bring in your answers, and you put them down on the damn answer page. Okay? So you're not going to have to do it, like, fast, because that's the quickest way to make a mistake at this. And also, if you think about it, if you know Excel at all, you can turn this thing into an Excel sheet like a boss, and then it's really easy. That is our internal way of measuring risk. And then on Monday, we will go to the monster capital asset pricing model as we drift towards our first exam next month. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.